welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much that we accidentally ate our book this week.
Yeah, it said the chocolate war. I thought it was made of chocolate.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually read it because I was digesting it.
Too busy eating it.
I was literally digesting this book.
Trying to read it in your... Okay, let's just go into a gross place. I'm going to say it. It's actually false. We both did read the book for this week. Although it'd be pretty fun to do an episode where we hadn't read the book and we're just making wild assumptions about it.
Why didn't we do that with 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah, it's about a vampire killing a girl and having sex with her, right? Oh, no, it's not. Sad. Although, even that would be better than, at least there'd be a woman in it.
Hey, it's the one thing 50 Shades of Grey does better than The Chocolate War.
It has multiple female characters with dialogue!
Boy, it could have taken a big lesson from The Chocolate War and reduced their word count by about 70,000.
So, as everyone has heard me complain about before, like, I think with Foundation was a big one, although I actually kind of liked Foundation. Yeah, The Chocolate War has no female characters.
Yeah.
Well, it has, like, one.
It has, yeah, like, a girl who gets, like, three lines of dialogue.
Yeah, and then
a really weird phone conversation.
Yeah, and then, like, one dude's mom, but she doesn't get any dialogue because he never actually listens to her when she talks.
He's just tuning her out.
It's very, very positive. And then all the other women, oh, who cares, because we're just too busy staring at their asses.
They're just sex objects, yes.
Yeah. So I apologize in advance if I get a little ragey. It will happen. So obviously this week we're reading The Chocolate War.
By Robert Cormier.
And this book was written in the early 70s, so I feel like spoiling it would be kind of difficult. But I guess neither one of us had read it before last week, so...
Yeah, this is actually the first book where it's a book that gets frequently assigned that we've read that we had never read, that all of my friends who complain that they weren't assigned the books we've been doing have actually read.
Yeah.
And of course, it's the one I haven't read.
The same thing happened to me. I brought the book home, and Scott goes, I read that. What the hell?
What the hell? You read, like, three books.
He doesn't listen. He won't even get mad. So with that said, we do have a spoiler policy, which is that we talk about the entire book, and we will spoil every single aspect of the plot.
Yep, so if that bothers you, now is the time to leave.
Yeah, because in this book, there is no justice in the world.
No, there is not.
And all of the bad guys get away with it, and the good guys all get fucked over.
Yep, the bad guys win, and the good guys go to the hospital.
Hooray!
Yay!
Hooray, The Chocolate War! What was our inspiration for the book?
Well, it is still banned a book month. Well, actually, it's not, I think.
It's not, but we're still doing it.
But we're still having our banned book month. And this is almost every year for the last decade in the top five, if not the top three, banned books, challenged books. Even though it is frequently assigned, it is also frequently challenged. I knew why in the first two chapters. In the first two chapters, you had a reference to there possibly being no God and jerking off. And, well, you just can't have that.
Yeah. And they start swearing, and then it just goes out of control.
That's right. And so I guess that would be the main reason, aside from the fact that lots of people are familiar with it.
Yeah, I mean, both of us have definitely heard of it and the author before. So.
I've always wanted to read it. I read one other of Robert Cormier's books when I was younger, and it was even darker than this book, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, kids are actually dying in that one.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, isn't the title After the First Death?
Yes.
So, you're guaranteed at least one victim. In both of the versions that we read, there was also a little author's note from Robert Cormier, and he mentions that when he was shopping this book around in the 1970s when he first wrote it, editors and publishers were very hesitant to pick it up because they thought it was kind of dark.
Yeah, I guess he is considered, at least by some people, to be the first YA novelist who was willing to go to a dark place. Though it is interesting to note that in the little afterword that he wrote, he said that when he was shopping it and people were telling him, oh, it's kind of dark for YA, he was like, what the hell's a YA? I didn't write a YA novel. I wrote a novel.
A book.
Inspired by his own son not particularly wanting to sell chocolates at their school's fundraiser, though in his case, not getting the shit kicked out of him for it.
I never sold that shit.
Oh, man, it sure did bring back memories of those school fundraisers. And
I'd be like, Mom, Dad, you want, like, a thing of cookie dough?
Yeah, right.
Okay, that's my sales.
I actually went door-to-door a couple times when I was younger.
Oh, really?
Like, for baseball, I think. I did that a couple times. And for Boy Scouts, I definitely did that.
You gave the popcorn?
It was not very fun to me, so I stopped doing it.
Yeah, I also want to just point out to everyone that I never sold a single Girl Scout cookie. Because my mom asked me if I wanted to sign up, I was like, that's stupid.
Just buy my cookies.
Gall. Oh, the other thing he was talking about was a lot of people were saying, well, we'll take the book on if you cut out X number of references about, you know, boys being sexual and make the ending happier. And he was like, nope.
Not doing it.
So apparently he managed to escape, like, getting his entire book, like, chopped to all hell, which I don't even know how is possible.
Yeah, he got it published. It took him many tries.
Yes.
Because that was also in his note. He wrote it in 1972 and it didn't actually get published until 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there is a pretty significant delay between finishing a book and seeing it actually hit the shelves, but it's usually not quite 2 full years.
Well, unless you're a bad author and your stuff just never goes on the shelves.
Well, you know, it can sit in the slush pile for 18 months before someone reads it.
Yeah. That's why you want an agent.
That's right.
Lessons from novel ideas.
Aspiring authors.
But despite all that stuff we just said about, you know, him not knowing why YA fiction was and all that, the genre of the book is YA.
Oh, it is firmly YA. I mean, there's a reason the publishers are all saying, this is a YA novel.
Yeah, it's set in a high school. Most of the characters are teenage boys.
There you go.
Yeah, you can't really escape that. Plot synopsis.
Oh, this was yours. You tell it.
Okay. Disturb the universe. Go to the hospital.
That'll teach you.
Stupid.
Or if we wanted a shorter version than that, even maybe just submit.
Submit. We are the Borg.
Submit.
You will be assimilated.
Resistance is futile.
I actually did think about putting resistance is futile.
Oh.
when I was reading a bunch of summaries and reviews and stuff of this book, everyone's like, Jerry's inspirational poster, Dare Disturb the Universe, leads him to blah, blah, blah. I was like, no.
Yeah, that's actually a really bad description of the plot.
Yeah, why would... Like, and everyone brought up that effing poster, and I was like, okay, not that important.
I mean, the poster, I think, is somewhat significant, but it's certainly not what inspires him to not sell the chocolates.
Yeah. And... yeah, it's just nonsense.
So what is the real plot?
Yeah, okay. So, again, we're going to keep trying with this actual shortened plot summary, see how people like it.
Try it for a few more episodes, or until a bunch of people go, stop!
Yeah.
Whatever happens.
So this is set at an all-boys Catholic high school. They're having their annual chocolate sale. But this time, Brother Leon, who's one of the teachers, impresses the importance that they're selling twice as many chocolates, and they actually cost more, but they have to sell them all. And the school's secret society, run by this guy named Archie, who, like, they like to dick around with people, they assign a freshman, Jerry Renault, the assignment of refusing to sell chocolates for 10 days. And I think the inspiration behind it is just to piss off Brother Leon.
Yeah.
But, so he does it, but then when he hits the end of the 10 days, instead of immediately taking the chocolates, he decides to keep refusing to sell the chocolates and kind of starts his own little mini revolt. And it looks like the school might actually follow along with him. Chocolate sales drop. Brother Leon freaks out. And then the vigils take over, jumpstart the school into a frenzy of selling chocolates, turning Jerry into an outcast, to the point of him getting the shit kicked out of him in front of the entire school and getting sent to the hospital.
There you go.
So, yeah. That happens. So, like I said, it's set in a Catholic high school. We mentioned he wrote it in the 70s. And Ben and I are actually trying to think of whether or not it takes place in a specific town.
I don't think it did. I really felt, I mean, if it was mentioned early on, then I guess I didn't remember, but I felt like it was in a generic American suburb.
Yeah, and actually, when we talked about Love in the Time of Cholera and how Gabriel Garcia Marquez was, you know, being cagey with the location because it kind of could represent all of South America, I think the same thing is going on in this book, that you don't really have a lot of specifics of setting and location because this could take place in any town in America.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that people who read this book recognize a couple of the people in it.
Uh-huh.
At least to some degree or another. And so it's, you know, a fairly, I mean, not a typical high school experience, yeah, given what happens, but some of the types of people you might recognize.
Yeah, and you might have been lucky enough not to have to go to high school with a total douche nozzle like Archie, but they're around.
They're in there.
So, who would you say the protagonist of this book is?
If I was going to choose, I would choose Jerry. Jerry Renault.
Renault?
I was thinking Renault the whole time.
I wasn't sure how Frenchy it was supposed to sound.
Yeah, right.
I was like, well, it's American, so I'm just going to go with Renault. Like a football coach is going to be
Renault.
I think he's going to pronounce it.
Way to take a hit, Renault. All right, well, we'll just call him Jerry, and that'll solve
all our problems. Yeah, solve all our problems.
Freshman.
Yep.
I guess supposed to be not really tiny small, but small because he's a freshman.
And he wants to play football, and if you're not huge, then you're small.
You know, 145-pounder, a little small even for high school football.
He's 5'9", 145 pounds.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you dick. I'm 5'9". I don't weigh 145 pounds.
No, you know, at his size, young boy, he'll probably be 3 inches. I'm sure he'll be 3 inches taller and 40 pounds heavier, like, next year.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. He might have gotten his growth stunted by epic beatdowns.
Yeah, how many growth plates got broken in that beatdown? Yeah.
And he's actually, well, he is in the book opening. Now that I think about it.
Yeah, he is. They murdered him. Not literally. Not literally.
I just had like a grenade going off, and I was thinking, oh my god. Yeah. Are kids throwing grenades at each other? This book is what insane.
Oh, it's a metaphor. He's in a football
he's
practice.
He's getting tackled. Okay.
Now I get it.
But Jerry is, in fact, in the opening chapter. He has a little bit of a tragic past because his mother died of cancer. And, of course, his father couldn't die because then you'd have to have a female character in the book.
Right.
So his mother died. He just wants to play football, man.
He's a football-crazed freshman kid. Certainly there have been a few of those in America's history.
And he doesn't want to rock the boat. He just wants to be good at football and not create any commotion.
That's right. Well, so unfortunate for him. What will later happen. But I guess could hit a couple of other personality traits. Start getting into the characters here.
Yeah.
And so he does have some desire to stand out from everybody else, I think, actually. I mean, he's not 100% conformist, but it's not in the form of, man, I want to do something so people notice me. It's more in the form of, like, wondering if he should, I think.
Well, yeah, that moment toward the beginning of the book when he's looking at all the hippies at the bus stop.
Right.
And one of them confronts him with, why do you keep staring at us, man?
Sam, I wasn't staring.
You trapped in your little box of conformity.
Right.
And Jerry starts thinking, like, oh, maybe should I try to step outside this more?
Am I in a box? Should I not be in a box?
Yeah, am I only doing what's expected of me?
Are boxes bad?
Trying to kind of figure that whole thing out.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, is a very, well, I think a people thought in general, but especially for young adults and teenagers, when you're younger, you have a really hard time figuring out how to be you, but also how to not, you know, how to fit in. I think a lot of people have that struggle.
Yes, I guess the real question of his character is, how come he still refuses to sell the chocolates after his assignment is up? And why does he continue to do it even through harassment and physical violence? It's kind of, it's interesting that he chooses to take such a stand when he himself is really not even entirely sure why.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, I think it just gathered enough momentum that he couldn't not do it.
Exactly. I was going to say, it's one of those things where you get so far into it, it's too late to back out. You know, he said no enough times that by the end of it, he can't say yes.
And maybe he just really doesn't want to sell the damn chocolates.
I don't blame him.
Neither do I.
I would hate that.
Fundraising blows.
No one likes it. Not even professional fundraisers. Everyone hates it.
There are probably some people who like it. And they are disgusting.
Everyone hates it. Everyone has to conform to hating fundraising.
That's right. And so, yeah, unfortunately for Jerry, he has an antagonist. The book has a pretty clear-cut protagonist-antagonist thing, I'd say.
Yes, unlike a lot of the other books, not maybe a lot, but some of the other books we've read where the bad guy is a little more circumstantial or murky, here it's very straightforward.
Archie!
Yeah, Archie is a horrible human being.
He likes to mess with people, and
psychologically.
Yeah, exactly. He's not like the prankster who, you know, a lot of those people go a little too far and come across as dicks instead of being funny, but he's not just playing pranks. Like, he actually wants to see what mental effect it has on people. Like, when they loosen every screw in every desk and chair in one of the classrooms, and it causes the brother teacher who runs the classroom to basically have a nervous breakdown. Like, he doesn't care about that. He's like, oh, isn't that interesting?
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
That's
yes.
his catchphrase.
That is his
for
catchphrase.
For sure.
And he definitely does that thing where he puts on the cool act.
Like,
I don't care about anything, man.
And he's totally the guy who has to be in charge. He thrives off of people hanging on every word he says and doing everything he wants.
Right, like he's actually the vice president of the Vigils, but he totally runs the show. And everybody knows it.
I was kind of afraid that in the aftermath of this book, he becomes an influential politician.
Oh.
Because he kind of has that personality.
Yeah, you could, I mean,
hopefully most of our politicians aren't as evil as he is, but
you could see him doing that.
Manipulating people in that way.
Yeah, some getting into some sphere where being able to manipulate people is extremely helpful for being successful.
One of the things I thought was pretty interesting about Archie's character is that I cannot remember at all.
All right.
What I was going to say. So we'll just...
So I guess there's nothing interesting about Archie's character.
Leave that behind. What the hell? I was sitting here thinking of it while you were talking so I could say it. And just lost it. Well, then there's nothing interesting about Archie. Actually, that was pretty... I like that there's Archie, who's all about psychologically manipulating people. Oh, now I remember the interesting thing about him. Is even the people who are quote-unquote close to him, who do his bidding or listen to him or are on his side technically, none of them like him.
Yeah, the eventual thought that everyone has about Archie is, what a bastard.
Yeah. Archie, you bastard. Like, everybody thinks that.
Obi, the secretary of the vigils, the kid who hangs around him the most, definitely
despises him,
thinks he's a manipulative bastard, and the president of the vigils, Carter, who is kind of a figurehead and kind of flexes his muscle, so to speak, a little down the stretch, and then gets everything reversed on him again, because Archie is, well, he is a bastard, but he's really good at what he does.
Yeah.
You know, turns things to his advantage after looking like he was finally toast.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking, Archie, that bastard.
And then even Emil Janza,
yep.
Who has basically been Archie's pawn the entire book and is actually kind of an antagonistic foil because he doesn't psychologically mess with people, he just physically hurts them.
Right.
He even ends up thinking Archie's a bastard.
Yep.
Even though Archie gives him the opportunity to do
what he wants to do. Emil's kind of an interesting character, actually. Like,
fucked up.
I worry about him in the aftermath. Like, he's gonna be a criminal, right? I mean, he kind of is already, but he's, he likes messing with people, too. Not as psychologically. He more likes just to see people hurting, I think.
Uh-huh.
And he's he and Archie are both bullies, but they're different types of bullies.
Yeah, Emil came across to me as the type of bully that, as an adult or as a removed observer, you can kind of feel sorry for. Oh, that kid's, like, he just needs help. Because he wants to hurt people because he's hurt somehow. Whereas Archie, I think, just likes being a dick.
Right, he likes to stir the pot, see what happens.
Yeah. That was what I took away from it, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Emil's kind of... I mean, he's described in the book as, and I think it's kind of apt, as an animal. He's just, like, he's very raw, and he doesn't really think things through, certainly not on a very deep level, and he just wants to do what he does. I don't know, I'm afraid he'll end up murdering somebody.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me. But what about the other bad guy we haven't talked about yet?
Brother Leon!
The adult in the situation.
Yeah, so he is obsessed with getting these chocolates sold, apparently. It's a little bit shady, the way he organizes fundraiser. It's kind of corrupt. Like, he fronted the money without really having it, and now he's stuck and has to get this stuff sold, or he's screwed.
Yeah.
Plus, they're like old chocolates. They're like surplus Mother's Day chocolates. He's like, oh, just pull the ribbons off and we'll be fine.
They usually only sell, was it 10,000 after sell 20,000?
And he's really cutthroat about it. Like, he's using every tool in the book to manipulate the student body into selling these things. And there's a little hint of fascism about it, I think. Like, the propaganda and then the enlisting the vigils to ensure that it happens. And then just, like, he's a little mentally unbalanced, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you get a definite taste before the chocolate sale even starts. You already know, Brother Leon, when he's obsessed with the chocolates, there's got to be something going on. Because the insights you get into his character before that, he's just such a jerk. The one scene that stood out to me was when he was in the classroom and he called the kid up to the front of the room and was accusing him of cheating on his tests because he was doing so well. And the class is just watching in silent horror as he's like yelling at this kid and terrifying the crap out of him. Even, like, hits him at one point.
Yep.
And then at the end of class, he goes, oh, none of you spoke out against him. Obviously, he wasn't cheating. He's the only brave one. You all let yourselves fall into Nazism or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, why the hell would you ever do that?
So you're bullying a student to prove a point?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you probably get away with that. Plus, he was just when Jerry started getting harassed and tormented and getting the crap beaten out of him.
Oh, he loved it.
He loved it. He was, yeah, I mean, he was losing his mind. He's, like, checking the figures every day, and he's massaging the data, like, for no reason, actually.
Uh-huh.
But that's exactly the sort of thing that the totalitarian government would do.
Uh-huh.
I think there are a lot of parallels there. It's never a good sign for your character when the most obvious parallel is Hitler's Germany.
That's probably not a positive sign. And I mean, at the end, even when Archie set up this whole boxing match raffle where the, you know, the entire school is going to watch Emil beat the crap out of Jerry, he tells Brother Leon about it, and Brother Leon freaking watches it without doing a damn thing.
Yep.
He is messed up.
Yeah. And he's the adult. He's the one who's supposed to know better.
Which I think is another...
Which is...
thing that resonates with kids or something that runs through the book is adults are corrupt.
I mean, it is definitely a trope in YA to have the bad guy be an adult rather than another kid. Or if there's a, like, there's usually a bully character and then an adult who's a bad guy. At least I feel like that's frequently the case. And a lot of YA, the adult is bumbling,
uh-huh.
which, even as a kid, kind of annoyed me, actually.
I think we've had that
conversation before. But, yeah, in this case, it's a much darker version of that.
The adult here is not bumbling, and actually the bully teenager is not just a simple bully, either.
Right.
But I feel at some point everyone realizes, oh, adults don't know as much as I always thought they did. They're not as sure of themselves as I always thought they were.
Yep.
And they can do fucked up stuff, too.
Yep.
And when you realize that when you're growing up, it's kind of a weird realization.
Yeah. it's a big moment in life, right?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know that anyone... Well, I mean, maybe if anyone has that realization in this book, it's Archie, which is the thing that's, I don't know, just adds to the lack of justice at the end of this story, because Archie just figuring out, oh, well, I can get power over an adult, too.
Uh-huh.
Because they aren't that much ahead of where we are, as it turns out. In fact, I'm actually ahead of a lot of them. At least in terms of manipulative power.
Uh-huh. There is that one student who realizes it when Brother Leon threatens to fail him.
Yes.
That's yes. One of those little two-page asides.
Yeah, that was in there. Okay, well, there is at least, you know, one likable character.
Oh, yeah.
The Goober.
The Goober.
Who also had a very French name.
Goober.
No wonder he went by Goober.
Robert Cormier is just like, people with French names are better.
He kind of has a French name, right?
Cormier, yeah. A little bit.
I halfway wonder if it's Cormier.
For that matter, we have a pretty French name. Roma. But the Goober, he's just a sweet kid. Likes to run, likes to play football.
Yep. And also gets caught up in an assignment. That was the one we mentioned earlier, loosening all the furniture in the classroom. Uh-huh. And that teacher has a nervous breakdown, and he feels so bad about it.
Uh-huh.
Like, it completely changes the way he sees the world, even. And then when Jerry is doing his thing, like, it really rattles him.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he tries to convince him to sell the chocolates. He decides he's going to quit the football team. And actually, toward the end of the book, when Jerry starts getting bullied, He just flat out refuses to go to school.
Yeah, he spends, like, 3 days in bed sick.
So, I mean, even though Jerry is the real casualty, because he's the one who gets literally pounded on, Goober's kind of this stander-by casualty, you know, someone who's hurt by the situation who isn't actually physically hurt by the situation, and that's just as sad, actually.
Yeah, well, it's, maybe it was to give Archie two victims, a psychological and a physical victim, though Jerry's also a psychological victim. The end of the book is, we've already described it a little bit, but it is the full-on 1984 dark ending where Jerry not only is physically beaten, but is mentally beaten, and he's trying to explain to Goober how he should just
give in
and conform. It's like, whew. That's not the message you usually get at the end of these books.
Yeah, you have that message, then you have the fact that Archie's power check in the form of the black box.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 6 marbles, 5 are white, 1's black, and if the assigner, who's Archie, draws the black marble, then he loses his position, he has to do the assignment he came up with, and then he can't, you know, do anymore. It's basically to keep him from going nuts.
Right.
And he's been doing this for 2 years, never drawn the black marble once, and then he sets up this boxing match, has to draw 2 marbles for each side of the fight, and draws 2 whites. So he completely gets away with it.
Yep.
And then when one of the teachers actually is trying to discipline him, Brother Leon just strolls up and dismisses the whole thing.
Yep.
Boys will be boys.
Oh boy.
Yeah, boys will beat the shit out of each other. What?
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
All right, well, how about some of our moral issues here?
Okay. Well, as I already mentioned, there are no female characters in the book. And this can bother me depending on how good the book is or how much it, you know, intrigues me. In this book, it really bothered me. I don't really know why exactly, but I started realizing there are no women in this book. Except for the women that the boys are, you know, staring at lustfully.
Yeah.
And then you have Ellen Barrett at the bus station who Jerry really wants to talk to. And I was thinking, okay, maybe we'll get, like, a female character kind of sneaking in here. And we'll show that because Jerry's decent, he can have a real relationship with a girl. And no, she gets 3 lines of dialogue over the phone.
Because he does the worst job ever of talking to her.
Uh-huh. And then that's about it. And I was thinking, I know you're at an all-boys high school. I know you're teenagers. But doesn't one of you have a meaningful relationship with a friend, a sister, a mother, anybody who is a woman?
One would assume, yes.
Somebody.
But not, certainly not anyone we meet in the book.
It just drove me nuts after a while.
Yeah.
And I know Robert Cormier probably wasn't sitting there like, women aren't worth writing into my book, but it drove me crazy. And
I actually remember one of the main characters in After the First Death was a young female teacher.
Yeah. So
he is capable of writing female characters.
And part of the point of the book is to show boys' relationships.
Right.
So, but I just think it's ridiculous. I know I've said this 100 times before, that women are 50% of the population and you can somehow not write them into a book. There was one line, though, that just made me rage. I actually closed the book and almost refused to pick it up again and then said, well, I can't not read the rest. I have to. Because so many people are counting on my opinions. My
like six,
popular
like
podcast.
6 or 7.
Yeah. Like my dad and 2 of my friends. But there's one line where these 2 boys are talking and they get distracted because this chick in tight jeans and a good-fitting sweater is walking around. And he mentions, you know, oh, well, he can still hold a conversation while he checks this girl out. Rape by eyeball is a very casual thing. I said, rape by eyeball. Shut the book.
An unfortunate choice of words, I think. We can agree.
I think the phrase is actually mostly... is part of how the book shows a little bit of its age.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think an editor would necessarily let you get away with that.
I tend to agree. I think that when the book was written, I mean, rape was... People still thought it was bad, but it wasn't such a loaded word. Because now that's a word that when anyone uses it in almost any context, it's not okay.
People are just much more aware of,
yeah,
of it and the consequences of it and are educated about it. And if you lose a football game and you're like, oh man, our team got raped, people will be like, dude.
Right, yeah.
Don't say that.
If someone in the NFL put that out on their Twitter account, it would blow up and be a thing.
Uh-huh. But in 1974, meh.
Well, less likely to be a thing. Yeah. And, I mean, I get what was trying to be accomplished there was to show how lustful and these two guys were and what a slave to their hormones they are. And I actually agree with you. I think if that book was being edited in 2012, that phrase may not have made it into publication. Though, I don't know, maybe it would still. It depends a lot. I mean, the editor probably would have had something to say, at least.
Yeah, and I should point out that I'm not offended that these guys are lustful. I don't care they're jacking off the entire book.
There is a lot of jacking off in this book, by the way.
I did think it was kind of weird that the one guy in that scene was touching himself in public.
Yeah.
But you get rid of that phrase and then still have that guy touch himself in public, and I get the idea. So, that was just...
Yeah.
It's just bothered me.
And the other scene, I think, where the book maybe shows its age a little bit, and, man, maybe even... Probably even when I was in school, this wouldn't have been remarked on, especially, but when Emil, well, via Archie's suggestion, really gets Jerry's blood up, it's because he calls him a queer and a fairy. And, well, first of all, no one uses those words as insults anymore.
They would have used
but
the more the phrase people use more often.
Yes,
as an insult today.
The slur that is unfortunately in very common use among school-aged people, especially. But like the fact that that's the thing that makes Jerry snap because he's just determined. No, I'm not going to let him push me over the edge because I see what he's doing and I'm not going to do it. And honestly, it was kind of disappointing that once he had that thought, he was able to be goaded. Because
by being called a queer.
Well, by being called anything. I mean, I'm just saying, if I get to the place where I'm going, this person is clearly trying to get me for, like, pissed off, then I don't care what he says.
Yeah.
It could be, he could actually hit whatever my psychological weak point is, and I'd be like, I've already written you off.
And you know what he should have done? Okay, well, yeah. Now I'm just being stupid, but instead of calling him a queer, he could have said something about his mom, who's died of cancer, which he's obviously very sensitive about.
Right.
And then that would have aged better.
Yeah.
Your mom insult, except, you know, a real good cutting one.
Right. Well, those have certainly been around longer. That's the oldest... the oldest taboo insult in the book is the mother insult. And so, yeah, I mean, he definitely could have gone there instead. Though, I mean, it was written... The book was written for the man's teenage son, and he probably knew, like, that's the fighting... Those are the fighting words at work.
And I think the other thing... The one thing I was okay with about this confrontation was Archie said, well, it wasn't necessarily the fact that he called him queer, it was he said, well, you accuse anybody of being something they aren't. That's what pisses them off.
Right.
So, that was really... He was using his psychological games behind it.
Right.
But I was just thinking, like, if I had written this book, Jerry would have been... you know, just totally snarky, yeah, you're right, I am, I'm a total homo, and, like, kissed Emil Janza, and then all the guys would have beaten the shit out of Emil for being, kissing a guy or something. German, like, suck it.
On a somewhat lighter note, I will add that as a guy who went to a co-ed public school, me and my friends, when I was in high school, kind of assumed that at the all-boys school, there was a lot of gayness going on.
Just like, oh, there are a bunch of dudes standing.
It's like, why are you getting mad that people are calling you queer? We kind of assumed all of you were gay anyway. That would really not make Jerry happy.
Yeah, that'd make a lot of people in that book pissy.
Yeah, probably would.
But honestly, if you are getting called that insult, the best response is to go, yeah, okay, I am. So what? And you totally take the wind out of their sails. I know it's not the purpose of the book, but...
Right.
Oh, do you want to talk a little bit about the religious...
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of it, but there was a little bit. There was a conversation, let's see, towards the opening where Archie was basically saying there's no God. And there was at least one, maybe even two other moments in the book. There were just some of these boys at this Catholic school who are obviously not Catholic. One of them was it maybe even one of the good students? Like, hey, I got into this private school and like...
Oh, because he was really smart.
Yeah, like going to chapel is part of the price I pay, but I don't really care want to do it.
And one of them mentions, like, half the boys who go to the school aren't even Catholic.
Yeah.
Most of them don't care.
It's certainly, like, if you were going to read the book with the sole purpose of reading between the lines religiously, you might think it was approving the idea of atheism or agnosticism, which is not even remotely the point of the book, and I only bring it up because it is a banned and challenged book, and... I'm sure that's been part of the ammo in the hopper for that before.
I think the issue that I would point out would be more, they go to a Catholic all-boys school, so theoretically they should all be some kind of religious, right?
Right.
And if you're a good Christian or a good Catholic, that means you should treat other people well.
Right.
And they all turn into violent savages at the end, so the religion... has not worked to make them better.
Right, and if there was a loving and merciful God, then why did he allow such bad things to happen down the stretch? You go to that place, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, the most common challenge for this book is that the boys are not respectful of authority. I mean, let's be honest, that's a thinly veiled excuse for the other things that were making people uncomfortable, but, you know...
Yeah, I bet most of the parents are like, they talk about masturbation.
Right, there's sex in here, that makes me uncomfortable.
Everyone knows you go blind if you touch your penis.
This book challenges authority and we can't encourage our children to do that. It's like, well, if you actually read the book, you could argue that the whole purpose of the books is to tell you to submit to authority.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's really the message that was trying to be put across, but I mentioned earlier I had friends who read it. I mean, we're talking over half a lifetime ago at this point.
A long time
ago. Back in middle school. And they, to a person, said, oh yeah, that book. The one that says... submit to authority. I went, oh, okay. Because I hadn't finished it, actually, when I had that conversation. And I got to the end, and I went, oh, yeah, because the people who defied authority, whether it was the student social authority, the vigils, or if it was the school itself, Brother Leon, however you want to interpret it, definitely didn't make out very well.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, the ending of the book and the darkness and the corruption and all of that is actually pointing out how all of these messages at the end are actually super shitty. Like, it shouldn't be this way.
Right.
But
right.
That's kind of how it is.
I would agree with that too, but, you know, someone who is trying to ban or challenge a book, I don't expect to read past the surface level. Actually, I don't expect them to read the book at all.
Yeah.
Based on most of the challenged books I've seen.
I know that there are some parents whose sole job it is to flip through these books and count the number of swears. Because parents literally went through the catcher of their eye and counted the number of fucks, crap, shits, everything. And then said, this book's bad because he says fuck 12 times.
That's...
What's wrong with you?
Can you imagine a worse possible way to judge something?
Oh my god. So stupid.
I mean, and it's frustrating because we're being so cavalier about it because, like, we just can't even put ourselves in that mental space. But there are a lot of people who actually think that way.
Uh-huh.
Or these things wouldn't get challenged in the first place. So, we would encourage all of you... to be loud about this shit when it comes up.
Be anti-censorship, please. There is one more thing I wanted to talk about as far as themes go.
Sure.
At the end, when they're having this raffle, and everyone's dying to buy these tickets because they can actually write down the hit that's going to happen and who throws it.
Yeah.
So, of course, most people are going to give the punches to Emil because they want to watch Jerry get the crap beat out of him.
Right.
And they're making all this money, and Carter, who's the president of the Vigils, mentions to Archie, like, this is crazy how everyone's here, everyone's buying tickets, and Archie says everyone's driven by greed, basically, and that if they win, they get money and the last of the chocolates. And also, everyone's violent and wants to see the shit get beat out of somebody. And Carter has this moment of, oh my god, am I like that? Are all people really like that? And the book's kind of suggesting that at some elemental level, people pretty much are like that.
No, you get throw all the way back to Hunger Games for this
one. And Lord of the Flies, and there are all sorts of parallels.
Yeah, they're not. It's not exactly the first book. Well, I guess Hunger Games is well after this one, but it's hardly the only book to make the point that people as a group are sometimes a lot worse than people as individuals.
Uh-huh. But I really liked that moment, actually. And although I pretty much despised Archie all the way through, I did like some of those revelations that he brought about.
Yeah. I mean, he is a... like I said, he's good at what he does. He does have some keen insight into human nature, though his is very much from the more cynical side of that. But, I mean, the observations... When he makes an observation like that, it's hard to fully disagree.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, you see things in the world that can only happen because people are driven by greed or by some desire to see violence.
Uh-huh. Anything else?
Oh.
Ready to wrap up?
Yeah, let's wrap.
Okay. So the writing. The book's actually not that long.
Yeah, I picked it up on a Thursday night, which is a lot later than I usually start reading for this podcast because sometimes we record on Friday. And I read all but, like, the last three chapters, and by the way, the chapters in this book are, like,
really short,
between 2 and 5 pages long, and I read everything but, like, the last scene, basically, on Friday, and I didn't spend a lot of the day doing it, like, I didn't consciously sit down and try to do it, it just worked out that way.
I think I spent an hour at work 3 days in a row reading it. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a book where if you're a fast reader, you could get pretty close to 100 page an hour rate. The writing itself is... So, I mean, obviously, because it's short, it reads pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
The writing is pretty good. It's not world-breaking brilliant, necessarily. World-breaking, world-beating, one of
world
those.
Something.
Yeah, you know.
Fantastic.
I think I just combined world-beating and groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Mixing my metaphors. But, you know, it's pretty good. It has its moments. I mean, especially characters have their moments of insight. It has a darkish slant to it.
Uh-huh.
One of the things I was saying before we recorded was that something like the scene where the two guys were having a conversation while they were ogling this girl.
Uh-huh.
Like, the one of them was able to talk and watch at the same time, and the other one was completely distracted by her. And if you change the tone of that scene just a little bit, if you'd nudged it 5 degrees off course, like, that could have been actually a really funny scene.
Yeah, that could be a comic scene.
Oh, totally. Like, where the one... Like, you're right, where the one horny teenager is just, like, only kind of half listening to his buddy because he's too busy staring at the nice ass and the tight jeans. I mean, I was saying earlier, if you've ever been a teenage boy, you've been there. You've been on one side of that conversation, and you've probably been on both sides, but it's... At some point.
I have never been on that side. I don't have any lust in me, though.
And so my... my main complaint with the writing, if I had to pick one, was that there was just a little bit too much of the sex in there. You know, and I'm not afraid of having sexual stuff in the book. Like, teenagers are horny. They think about sex. Like, uh-huh. Any book about teenagers where there's no sex at all is extremely unrealistic. Yes. But I think you could have cut the amount of it in half. There were just a few too many scenes where some boy was being lustful or...
We still would have gotten the point.
Very much so.
Without all of it.
Without someone jerking off every third chapter.
and then one other thing we thought about, I think either one of us were really bothered by it, but there were a lot of moments where there were just one or two pages of a character having a little bit of a thing. So the two boys having the conversation with the girl, or a couple of various guys trying to sell chocolates in different ways. Right. They pop up for a couple pages and then disappear and pretty much never come back. And it's helpful to give you a little bit of read of the guys in the school and what they think and et cetera, et cetera. But because they never come back, it's not... You could argue that it's not 100% necessary.
Right. All right, anywho...
Oh yeah, so one more thing I just want to say about the quality of the writing of the book. And I want to say this is the case for me and not the case for Ben. We actually disagree a little bit on this book. And that's that I was not very interested by this book. Hit the halfway point, hit that line that I hated, thought, well, I have to keep reading it, and then got pretty interested in the end. I actually liked the darkness of the last couple chapters and the fact that Archie got away with it.
Yeah.
But for a lot of the book, I was pretty bored.
See, I was the opposite. I was actually into the plot. And a comment I've made several times is that this is a boy's book. I mean, it really is. It's about boys. It's full of boys. Their main take on women is that they are either young and desirable and sex objects, or that they're old and ignorable. And, I mean, if you were, even if you were a younger girl, I think, if you were in middle school when this book is frequently assigned and reading something like that, like, I mean, surely that would annoy you even if you didn't quite have all of the context to put why into words yet. And so I actually would not be surprised if boys tended to like this book better than girls do, just because of that.
I could see that. And personally, for me, if you want to read a boy's book, read Lord of the Flies, which is about boys interacting with each other, but written with really pretty prose and deep meaning, and I think ultimately a better book.
I agree. I mean, I enjoyed this book. I mean, if nothing else, it would be interesting for the ending.
Yeah. I do like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, questions for the series.
Does Leon ever get his comeuppance? Like, I really want... There was Brother Jacques who killed the power and kind of put an end...
For a couple seconds.
Broke up the fight. And was attempting to chew Archie out, at least. Because he's the one teacher who actually could see everything that was going on.
Uh-huh.
I really hope he exposes Leon's corruption, and when the headmaster gets well again, like, gets his ass fired, man.
Yeah, and Ben and I both saw that there's actually a sequel to this book called After the Chocolate War, and we're both wondering, it's just more of the same shitty stuff happening.
I know absolutely nothing about the sequel, and I'm really curious what happens.
Is Jerry dead or brain damaged, or, you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
I kind of wondered, how is there a sequel to this book?
Yeah, I really do. Like, is it a direct sequel with the same characters, or is it a couple of years later and just watching the effects reverberate through the school, even maybe 4 or 5 years later after Jerry's graduated? I guess there's an easy way to find out.
Read it.
Yeah, read the fucking book.
I'll make you read it, and then
yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah, so ultimately, I was not a huge fan. If anyone who listens has agreed with my opinion on every single book so far, I would say don't bother. But
yeah, I would say if you're not into the dark stuff, or if you really need to have a woman in the book, which, you know, both are things I can understand, then this might not be yours. And, you know, I didn't love it to death. It wasn't, like, the best thing I've ever read, but I thought it was interesting. I thought it was worth reading, for sure.
And it is a short read, so, you know, if you're intrigued, you might as well.
Yeah, check it out.
Try it.
All right, so, man, we're really down the stretch here. Yeah. So we are both...
still reading.
Reading long books.
Yes.
And the A Feast for Crows, what you've been reading, is longer than Cider House Rules, which I've been reading, but it's paced a lot faster. I'm even enjoying this book. This is not anything against the Cider House Rules, because I actually am enjoying the book. It just is not one that you read 200-page chunks of in one sitting.
Yeah, Feast for Crows, on the other hand, is pretty easy to sit down and read for a while.
You could read a 200-page chunk of it and be like 12% of the way through the book. It's not quite as long as I'm making it out to be, but there is a lot of it.
It is long, and I did actually take a short break and read one of my favorite books from my childhood in between.
Brave New World?
No. But speaking of Brave New World...
Oh yeah, next week we'll be reading Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. The science fiction classic, also a favorite Band and Challenge book.
Which I have also never read.
Oh, I actually did read this one.
And everyone's read A Brave New World. I was like, how am I getting away with this?
I don't know. I should be looking forward to your take on this one.
It was actually because in the ninth grade, our teacher said, you can read A Brave New World, you can read Fahrenheit 451, or you can read Ender's Game. And I was like, fuck it, I'm reading Ender's Game. That book is awesome.
See, they said that to me, and I read all three of them because I was interested in all three of them.
Well, the Socratic seminar in our class was like, I don't know, and bleh, and then, like, me and the other three people who read Ender's Game were like, intelligent conversation.
People who read Brave New World were like, this book was weird and I don't get it.
Yeah.
Which is fair, because that might end up being our take.
So, if you like what we do for some reason, and you would like to get in contact with us, you can find us at our website, www.novelideaspodcast.com.
Heck yeah, leave a comment, or you can tweet us at novelideaspod.
You can email us, although no one does that, at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
And for our iTunes users, please, ratings, reviews, all the stuff that you can do on iTunes to make them notice us.
I actually got on iTunes the other day.
Yeah.
Typed in novel ideas, and I didn't even have to click on podcasts. We are actually on the front page result search now. If you type in novel ideas.
All right, now if we can just convince everyone who goes to iTunes to type in novel ideas.
Yeah. Recommend us to an iTunes editor.
Yeah, there you go.
Make them love us.
Use the power of our listeners.
All seven of you.
All seven of you. One of you has to know someone kind of important.
We sure don't.
We sure don't. All right. Well, anyway, I think that is all.
Yeah.
So, it was fun. We'll see you next time.
Tune in next week for a brand new world. Bye.